Winning the Vikings for Christ. The Scandinavians were the last great group of Teutonic people to abandon heathenism and embrace Christianity. The Viking marauders from the pagan north wreaked havoc throughout northern and western Europe, and throughout the 9th and 10th centuries, the Vikings raided, killed, and plundered. But they also established strong Viking settlements in Normandy, in France, England, Scotland, Ireland, Iceland, Greenland, throughout the Baltic, and in Russia. In fact, the very word Rus comes from the red that was brought into Russia. The original Russians actually were Swedish Vikings who established the civilization there. And so these were great seamen who the courage to go in the open oceans in open vessels, rowing and sailing vessels, just incredible. One of the most honored names amongst the Vikings would be Ansgar, the Apostle of the North. When the Vikings were the terror of Europe, God placed a great missionary burden on young Ansgar. With his own money, Ansgar redeemed or bought several Danish youths who were slaves. He educated them to be his co-workers and bring the gospel to their countrymen. Harald, the king of Denmark, had been driven from his throne and had sought refuge at the court of Louis I, king of the Franks. And while at Louis's court, King Harald heard the gospel, turned to Christ, and submitted himself to being baptized. On the king's return to Denmark, Ansgar eagerly joined the king to preach the gospel to the Danes. At Hedby, Ansgar built a small wooden church, but persecution forced him to flee the country. With two co-workers, Ansgar crossed the Baltic Sea to begin ministering in Sweden. On the way, the vessel was plundered by pirates and arrived destitute in Sweden. So it's not just these days that things like that can happen on the way of the field. King Bjorn welcomed the Christians of Sweden, and the first church was built in the country. At an assembly of the people, a question was debated whether the missionary should be allowed to continue to preach Christ and so invite the anger of the gods, or the Viking gods. At a critical part in the discussion, an old Viking stood up and declared with great force, "It's clear that the Christian God is stronger than Thor." This decided the matter, and the missionaries received freedom to continue to preach the gospel in Sweden because Thor was unable to stop them when they destroyed the idols and so on. The Vikings were seen as God's judgment on a backslidden church. More than any previous invasions and crisis faced by the Christian church, the Viking raids wrought desolation throughout Western Christendom. The Vikings laid waste to monasteries and churches, and they shook them to the foundations. A decline and a decay in the faith and the morals had set in before the Viking invasions, and many saw the fury of the Norsemen as a judgment of God upon a backslidden and often apostate church. But there was resistance in Wessex. Churches and monasteries were destroyed, clergy and monks were slain, church buildings lay vacant, until in the south of England, the West Saxons were rallied by King Alfred the Great to steadfastly resist. Wessex, West Saxons, Sussex, South Saxons, Essex, East Saxons. Ultimately, he defeated the great Danish invasion. In 878, after King Alfred had defeated the Danish army at Ashdown, he required King Guthrum and 30 other of his leaders, his earls, to be baptized as Christians. In 882, another Viking leader in the Lower Rhine region abandoned heathenism and embraced Christianity. Lower Rhine region, that would have been Germany or Netherlands. And they received baptism in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. The ethics of Christianity were so radically different to traditional Viking culture, it took literally centuries for the Vikings and all the Scandinavian people to be thoroughly evangelized and discipled. One of the chief attractions was the conviction that Christ is a mighty victor, who has risen triumphant over death. The power of Christ impressed the hardened Viking warriors. In Norway, the king commanded his people, "Be converted to Christ, or be prepared to die." King Harald of Denmark was baptized 826 in Mainz. Some of the first pagans in Sweden to request baptism included the leaders of Birka, an island in Lake Mälar. Birka is very close to Uppsala, and where today you'd have Stockholm, not far from the present capital of Stockholm. Despite serious reverses and violence and destruction of churches, Ansgar did not give up. He persevered, and soon the Danish missionaries were being sent to establish churches in Sweden. Ansgar's faithful work was continued by his disciple Rimbert, who ministered both amongst the Danes and the Swedes. Rimbert was succeeded by Adelgar. And as the Saxons grew in strength and became champions of the Christian cause, Henry became king of the Germans in 919. He sponsored numerous missionary outreaches to the Danes. And after his victory over the Danes in 934, King Henry compelled the rulers to accept Christianity. Again, the pattern in Europe. Kings are converted, their people follow. In Sweden, a pagan king, Eric, arose, hostile to Christianity, yet the church continued to grow. The missionary Popo won many thousands to the faith. Odenkar, a missionary from Denmark, strengthened the gospel work in Sweden. King Canute sponsored missions to England and Denmark. Under King Canute, the church was firmly established in Denmark. Canute later became king of all England, and under his support, missionaries from Germany established more churches in Denmark. He commanded subjects to learn the Lord's Prayer and be faithful in communion with the Lord. The church in Denmark grew and deepened its strong ties with the Saxon churches in Germany and England. And then there were the missions to Norway. The Norwegian kingdom was the creation of Harald Fairhair, or Haarfagre, who died in 933. With much combat, he had established himself ruler over all of Norway. You didn't become king by who your relatives were. It wasn't hereditary. It was you had to earn the rights in battle. His sons, Eric Bloodaxe and Hakon the Good, you can kind of picture these people just from their names, they struggled over the succession. Hakon had been sent to England to study and had been converted, baptized, and discipled as a Christian. So in 935, the young, tall, handsome, athletic Hakon established his supremacy through combat, and he is accepted as king of all Norway. And he had a royal mission to win the Vikings. Hakon then attempted to win his people to the Christian faith. Most of his immediate court were soon baptized. And later he sent to England for missionaries and he began to build churches in Norway. And after reigning 15 years, by the year 950, Hakon proposed to the assembly of landowners that they adopt Christianity. Most of the landowners responded with great hostility and vehemently refused to abandon the old pagan ways. But abandon the old pagan ways, they and their children ultimately did. Olaf Tryggvason was the son of the king of Norway, born in 964. His great-grandfather, Harald Haarfagre, the Fairhead, had initially established the kingdom of Norway. When Olaf's father was murdered in 968, Olaf fled the country with his mother. He was an adventurous youth. He is captured by slave raiders. He is sold into slavery. He is rescued and raised in a Scandinavian colony in Russia. Olaf ended up in the court of Russia's Tsar Vladimir I, where he became a favorite of the queen. All this before he turned 12. When Olaf was just 12 years old, the Tsar put a dozen ships under his command and sent them off into battle. Obviously, youngsters grew up a little faster. By the time he was 21 years old, Olaf Tryggvason was renowned as the ultimate Viking. Tall, strong, handsome, unequaled in martial skill, he led a huge fleet of Swedish Vikings and a fleet of almost 90 ships to loot Holland. After devastating the Dutch, he went on to fight the French. He left a massive amount of death and destruction wherever he went. His next target was England, where, after the Battle of Maldon, near the mouth of the Thames, he forced the Anglo-Saxon king, Ethelred the Unready, to pay a tribute of 10,000 pounds of silver. That's where the term pound comes in English terms. A pound was a pound of silver. After this, he moved north, plundering Northumberland and Scotland. He attacked Hebrides and the Isle of Man. He conducted raids in Northern Ireland, Wales and Cornwall and France again. And with a fleet of over 94 ships, he again attacked England, killing and looting wildly. Off the coast of Cornwall, Olaf heard of a local fortune teller who was renowned to have a gift of prophecy. So Olaf rode to the remote rocky retreat and he asked the prophet if he could foresee anything in his future. Thou wilt become a renowned king and do celebrated deeds. Many men wilt thou bring to faith and baptism and both to thy own and others' good. And that thou not doubt the truth of this prophecy, listen to this. The old man predicted that Olaf would soon suffer a mutiny from his men, in which he would be wounded and carried to a ship on his oblong shield. And after 7 days he'd recover and he'd be baptized as a Christian. When the mutiny, the wounding and the recovery happened precisely as the hermit had predicted, Olaf sought the old man again to inquire, how could you possess such knowledge? The man humbly confessed, the God of the Christians has blessed me. So he was known as a man who could foretell the future, but actually he was a Christian. When King Ethelred heard the news of the conversion and baptism of his tormentor, King Olaf, he sent his bishop and officials to present him with royal gifts and offer Christian fellowship. In 995, news came from Norway that the leader, Earl Haakon, the very man who had murdered Olaf's father, had caused an uproar in the land by demanding the daughters of the respected leaders of the community. Although Earl Haakon had originally accepted Christianity under threat from the German Emperor Otto, he had since reverted to heathenism, restoring many heathen temples and persecuting Christians. Earl Haakon the Apostate had gone even so far as to offer his best horses and his youngest son, a 17-year-old, as sacrifices to the heathen goddess, probably Freya. It was at this opportune time that Olaf, the great grandson of King Harald Haarfagr, determined to leave England and avenge the death of his father, the exile of his mother, the slavery of his youth, and to end the pagan misrule of Earl Haakon. With just 5 ships, Olaf landed in Norway and claimed it for Christ. Soon word reached him that Earl Haakon had angered 2 landowners by attempting to seize their wives for himself. The growing resistance was greatly strengthened when word reached him that Olaf Tryggvason was on his way to claim the throne and deal with Haakon. Olaf was renowned as the ultimate Viking warrior, without parallel. His height, his strength, his athletic stature, his superior skills in all the warrior arts, his boldness and ruthlessness were renowned throughout the land. Earl Haakon fled and hid in a pit beneath a pigsty where he was killed by a slave. Not exactly a Valhalla deserving death by Viking standards. At a national assembly, Olaf was proclaimed king of all Norway. He then travelled throughout the land, consolidating his rule and attempting to Christianize the people. Many of his relatives became his first converts, and he appointed them as Christ's captains. "I will make you great and mighty men for doing this work. All Norway must be Christian or die." The scattered settlements on the west and east shores of the Olafsfjord readily accepted baptism. But the people in the northern part of the Vik resisted the gospel. So King Olaf challenged the followers of Thor and Odin to combat. And by the end of the year, he had convinced everyone Christ is greater than Thor and Odin. As King Olaf moved to the western and northern fjords of Norway, he challenged the heathen to swimming contests. Now that's in icy waters, by the way. Archery contests and mortal combat. In other words, fight to the death. Olaf's message was to the point, repent or die. And those who chose to fight were quickly defeated by Olaf's superior strength and skill. King Olaf declared the heathen gods are demons. Their power behind the idols were evil spirits. And all sorcerers and those who promoted idolatry and heathenism were to be banished. Those wizards and priests who resisted were killed, and some other incorrigibles were marooned on a rock far offshore at low tide. At Trondheim, which had been the stronghold of the late heathen King Earl Haakon, Olaf burned the heathen temple and he destroyed the idols. The local chiefs rose up in rebellion against him, and Olaf mustered a huge navy with 30 ships, and he anchored in the river Nid. Olaf invited the local chiefs to a feast where he indicated he would be willing to perform a heathen sacrifice. When the chiefs were gathered together, Olaf declared, "If I am to return to making heathen sacrifices, then I will make the greatest sacrifice of all. I will not sacrifice slaves, but men. I will sacrifice the greatest of men only." And then named the most prominent leaders of his opposition as his chosen sacrifices. As the horrified heathen howled in protest, Olaf gave them a straight challenge, baptism or battle. He held 11 leaders hostage while everyone was baptized. At nearby Trondheim, the local chief Ironbeard, I presume he didn't clean it that often, demanded that the king offer sacrifices other kings before him had done. Olaf said he would do so, walked into the temple and smashed the idol of Thor to pieces with his axe. He killed Ironbeard and persuaded the rest of the village to abandon their heathen ways and be baptized as Christians. Further north, Olaf faced the strong opposition of King Raud the Strong. Raud mobilized his men and a fierce sea battle was fought, and Olaf's forces overwhelmed Raud's rebels. Raud escaped to take refuge in island hideout in Sultan Ford, and the narrow challenge to the ford was turbulent, and for a week no ship could enter. As Raud attempted to mobilize his witchcraft against the king, Olaf summoned his bishop to read the Gospels and pray. By some miracle, the ships managed to negotiate the treacherous and turbulent rocky entrance to the ford. Soon Raud was apprehended and brought before the king, who ordered him, submit to Christ. I will not take your property from you. Instead, I'll be your friend if you make yourself worthy to be so. When Raud rejected this offer with vile blasphemies, Olaf had his men force an adder, a snake, down his throat. How do they even think of these things? This was the last resistance to Olaf's crusade to eradicate paganism in Norway. Now he focused on winning Iceland to Christ. And the Vikings surrendered to Christ. By a combination of pioneer missionary work, royal favor, and combat, the ferocious Vikings were convinced to abandon heathenism, destroy the idols, abandon their aggression, cease the violent raids, and submit to baptism, committing to follow the Christian faith. The Vikings came to be convinced that the Christian God is more powerful than all other gods. They saw how he answered the prayer of the Christians, and they witnessed miracles. These are these uniquely Norwegian churches, and there are hundreds of them built like this, some of which are 1,000 years old. They saw how Christian kings and missionaries were able to destroy idols and defy the heathen gods and taboos without suffering any ill effects. They saw that their pagan gods were powerless before the all-powerful our Lord Jesus Christ. This is what won the Vikings. It was the power of the gospel. So this wimpy, wet, weedy, apologetic kind of Christianity, they wouldn't have won the Vikings to Christ. Christ was honored and worshipped as the mighty warrior who had triumphed over all the powers of death, hell, and the grave. He is the risen, ascended Christ, the King of kings, the Lord of lords, with all other authorities in subjection to him. By the way, this picture comes from Lindisfarne, the island where the Vikings first made themselves known to the world by attacking that isolated monastery off the east coast of England, off Northumbria. Yes, all kings shall fall down before him, and all nations shall serve him. You can see how Scandinavia has been won for Christ, not only by the extraordinary churches all around, like this one in Denmark, just absolutely magnificent churches all over. And you can see it in their flags, Denmark. Notice the cross in every Scandinavian flag serves as a dramatic testimony of their conversion to the Vikings. Denmark, the first of the Viking kingdoms, won to Christ. This is Norway's flag. This is Iceland's, Sweden, Finland, and Great Britain. Remember, the Vikings did conquer England, so even the English flag has got the crosses in it. So with the Norman invasion of, many people say Normans are French. No, they weren't. They were Vikings who attacked from France. And the first building built by the Vikings in England was the White Tower, which is known as the Tower of London, which is absolutely full of history. Even in America, you can go to different places where there are Viking statues. So the Vikings coming to Christ has been a major and tremendous testimony of the power of the gospel. This article in full, I've just given a few headings, but it's a full chapter in a manual, and also you can get on our reformationessay.org website. We've got a lot of history sources. And if you use social media on Facebook, we keep putting a lot of our videos and audio links and articles. Obviously, in the Victorious Christians Who Changed the World, we have a whole lot of histories, 32 biographies which cover the last 20 centuries of heroes of the faith to give us a representative insight into history. We've done a history overview before at the Bible College in Barberton, back to the Bible Training College.